Welcome to Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, the RNIB's technology show for blind and partially sighted people. See technology differently.
And a very happy new year to you. Welcome to our first show of 2020. I cannot believe I'm saying that. 2020, here it is. Robin Christofferson is back with me. Happy new year to you.
Happy new year. I wish I had 2020 vision. I wish I had 660 vision. I remember those days.
Some vision that's useful would be nice. I know. Yeah. 2020 would be an absolute bonus on that one.
Still.
We are joined by a very special guest this hour, Robin, and I'm so glad he's with us, not just for this episode, but our first two episodes of 2020. I think he will be here for a lot more of them over the year. David Woodbridge from Vision Australia is here. Happy New Year to you, David.
I was trying to work out who you were talking about. I thought maybe you've got another guest on the show. I thought a special guest. What?
Definitely you. Definitely
thank you. Thank you.
Well, it's lovely to be here. It is lovely to be back after what has basically been just a period of eating a lot. And playing with tech, obviously. I mean, it's actually the perfect time of year when you think about it. So I thought what we would do over the next couple of episodes as we just ease ourselves back into the year is, first off, in this episode, to take a look back at the decade. You know, it's funny because I kind of forgot that we were at the end of a decade. And we should add a disclaimer here. I know you're going to say this, Robin. I know we're not technically at the end of a decade. You can explain this. I don't get it.
Yeah, so this is the calendar that started with the birth of Jesus a long time ago. But it started at one. Well, actually, that's completely untrue because it was retrospectively applied several hundred years later. But anyway, because there was no year zero,
what?
This is all very technical, and I know I'm only saying this. I don't actually kind of subscribe to this, but I'm only saying it so we don't get emails. So, yeah, there was no year zero. We know it, guys. We know that the millennia didn't start until the end of 2001, for example, and this decade isn't going to start until the end of 2020. So, you know, just please don't email us about it. If we did it on January 1st next year, people would think we're mad. And everybody else would have done it this year. So, you know, just sorry, guys. Yes. We know. But happy new year. Happy new decade.
Exactly correct. I agree.
I'm totally confused by all of that.
That was funny.
Okay, so let's just say.
We went straight from -1 to +1. That's basically the thing. We skipped a year.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Is that in decibel format?
And that's in Fahrenheit.
Oh, excellent.
Well, you can discuss that amongst yourselves, ladies and gentlemen. I have no idea. All I know is, for me, as a silly person perspective, it's a new decade. I'm just going to go with it. So, yeah, here we are in 2020. But the question is, what about the technology that came around? And actually, this was the interesting bit about this conversation, was that it makes you start to think about all the tech that appeared from 2010. And when we think about accessibility, guys, accessibility wasn't in its infancy in 2010, but it certainly wasn't where it is now. I think that's fair to say, isn't it? David, I want you to sort of chime in this first. I know there's tons of tech we can talk about, but what has been your sort of overall experience, would you say, in the last decade of where we were in 2010 to where we are today?
I'd really have to say it's the rise of voice recognition, because that has really taken the stage. I mean, we had our beloved Siri, who I know everybody sometimes hates, in 2011. But then after that, we had the explosion of the Echo, the Google, Cortana, whatever the one's called on Samsung, I never use Bixby. And that's been a huge imprint on the technology space. And then we had all the other things that were going on. And of course, Apple went forward again with their iPad and the Apple Watch and the AirPods and everything else. So, and when I was contemplating this last month, or as in last decade, last year, I was quite amazed by how many things have happened in this decade, whereas it was a little bit on the old slow side in 2010, because I remember in the mid 90s, remember when we had that horrible thing that arrived on the planet called Windows 3.1, and we thought, right, that's the end of it. Blind people are actually totally locked out of computers, graphics user interfaces, nobody can ever use it, it's blind, we've had it, see you later. And what's improved now is that when there's ever changes anymore, we don't have that fear of losing behind, because all the major manufacturers are putting their 10 cents worth in and making sure that all their new products overall are accessible.
Yeah, I mean, if we think back to 10 years ago, most people were using Windows. VoiceOver on the Mac was, you know, still less mature, much less mature than it is today. Windows 7 came out in 2009. So most people were using either XP or Windows 7. And actually, with a screen reader, with a decent screen reader, that was a really good experience. So we were in a good place, an expensive place with, you know, screen reader, the cost of screen readers, like Jaws and Window Eyes, etc. But, you know, I think on the PC, it was a relatively good space. So we had a bumpy start from Windows 3.1. Windows 3.11 was a lot better for screen reader support. But, you know, and the screen readers themselves were maturing over those two decades. But yeah, so we were in a relatively good place on the PC side of things. But as far as phones were concerned, you know, I was using my Nokia phone with Torx, and that wasn't cheap. I can't remember now, was it like 200 quid or something to make your phone talk? So we've really come on a long way since then. But we have had some bumps in the road over that last, over this last decade, you know, when Windows went to Windows 8, then 8.1, and even Windows 10, I don't know about you guys, but a lot of the dialogues just stopped talking. We went from MSAA, that way that, you know, Microsoft Active Accessibility, which seemed to just grab everything nicely on the screen, to UI automation, the new way of doing it, which actually only now really, with recent versions of Windows 10, seems to be offering the same level of screen reader access that we had 10 years ago. So there's been some bumps along the way there. But like you were saying, you know, with Apple products and the mainstreaming of accessibility, you know, they've really led the way and kind of shown that, you know, how accessibility is done well. And it's not this bolt-on thing.
Exactly. Actually, it was quite funny because probably because I went back to the Mac in 2005 because we had that dark area where that we had no speech on the Mac at all. So I spent, honestly, probably since about 2012, I don't have a Windows machine at home. So I basically sat back and, I mean, I had a Windows machine at work, of course, with Jaws and so on, but at home. And I used to sit back in my, you know, in my little white ivory tower and laugh at everybody that was having issues with their video drivers and their authorizations and their blue screens of death and the mute button going on so they couldn't get it back independently themselves. And I'm going, what a bunch of rat bags. I'm like, you know, why the hell would you have a Windows? So that's why I thought I've really had a peaceful decade because I just completely got out of Windows because every time it went wrong at work, I just threw the laptop at one of the IT people and said, here, fix it. Whereas at home, I could just do it myself. So I haven't had the pain of growing up with screen readers and Windows in the last, yeah, a good 9 years now.
But it's interesting you say that because, of course, like you say, work, and that's often where you encounter Windows.
Exactly.
That you do have to face it at some point. It's like the in-laws, isn't it? You've got to face them at some point, and you don't really get much of a choice in it. No. Unless you choose not to work or you don't get married, I guess, if we were taking that analogy to its fruitful end. But it seems to me that Windows, I think anyway, Windows has improved incredibly for a screen reader user through Windows 10, although it was a very shaky start. Windows 8, let's not even go there. It was just terrible. Windows 7 was brilliant, and there's still a lot of people, and as we move into this year, of course, this very month ends Windows 7 support completely. Windows 7 is still usable. I mean, you can still use it, but it won't be supported by Windows anymore or Microsoft anymore. And that, of course, is it really is time to make the upgrade if you haven't already. But I can understand why a lot of blind people are saying, no, I'm quite happy with Windows 7, because when it works, why would you want to change it? That's the thing. But you know, it's interesting you say that Because my experience of Mac versus Windows, I used to use this analogy that people used to look at me rather oddly when I would talk about it, where I'd say, right, so imagine Windows to me is trying to get to work on a Monday morning. It's raining, it's really bumper-to-bumper traffic, takes you ages to get there, and when you finally get to your destination, you're annoyed, you're angry. You're not really happy about life. Whereas a Mac, it's like driving on a Sunday morning in a convertible car with the roof down and you're sailing along. And when you get to your destination, the world's great. And that's been my experience of Mac. And then this year, I have to say that was using the screen with magnifier. Then this year, I started using VoiceOver. And then I started to feel like I was back on that road on Monday morning again because I had a lot of roadblocks along the way. However, my experience of both, Jaws, I would say, is the king of screen readers. It is absolutely, if you're working, you really need Jaws. And I understand NVDA is good, and it is. And Narrator is getting there. But, you know, my conclusion at the end of this year is, at the end of last year, really, was that, no, Jaws is the one you need. If you're in employment, you need to be using Jaws for a whole wide range of reasons we could go into. And on the Mac front, VoiceOver is getting there. I am enjoying it. I would say I'm enjoying them both equally for different things. I mean, you know, just a simple thing. I started doing TV stuff last year in Canada. And they asked me to edit my own videos. And I'm saying, how am I going to do that? And I was able to edit using the Mac, using iMovie. And, you know, I can do it without the screen, which is just incredible. The level of accessibility on a Mac is just incredible. Windows, it's getting there. Windows, I would say, is the more kind of functional for Word documents, for emails, the kind of everyday stuff that you do. But creativity, even that is accessible, and that's what I love about the Mac. So, it's been an interesting decade because both systems from 2010 up to the end of last year have had a rocky road. Bumpy start, especially in the early stages of the decade, but up to the end, they've sorted it out.
Yeah, although what I try and explain to people now is that in particular, if you're a home user and all you want to do is the three functions of computing, you want to do email, word processing, and web browsing, a bit of it, then you don't need to go out and buy a $1,500 Western Australia screen reader. You can get away with NVDA, the Mac, and you know, Narrator these days is absolutely brilliant as far as those three tasks are concerned. So I'm trying to convince people these days, particularly this decade, is that the screen readers are getting to a point now where you don't, depending on what you're doing, you don't necessarily have to buy an expensive screen reader anymore.
And I think that speaks to a massive theme of this last decade, which is the mainstreaming of assistive technology. So if we think back 10 years ago, you know, the iPhone didn't exist. You still had a talking note taker, a talking MP3 player, a talking barcode scanner, you know, times by another 10 different things that you had to carry around with you. And they were all really expensive. So we've gradually transitioned towards the built-in options being really, really viable. Maybe not in a, you know, corporate environment perhaps, but potentially, you know, depending on what you need to do. Narrator support on the web now is really good. So it might be that, you know, a lot of companies just use web applications and its support for Office is pretty good too. So, you know, we've kind of gone on a long journey towards being able to use the tech that everybody else uses. And I don't know if we mentioned, or we haven't kind of emphasized yet the advent of the smartphone. Since the iPhone, you know, we've now got apps coming out of our ears that can transform how we do things that would have otherwise been a specialist device. And because of the accessibility that's built into the developer tools within iOS especially, a lot of those are accessible to a completely blind person, voiceover user, for example, even though the developers might not really have put a lot of effort or awareness even into accessibility in developing those. So I think that, and along with the voice recognition that you talked about before, which is part and parcel of how we interact with the technology that we carry around with us, it's just made it a lot more viable to be able to be productive, affordable. And I should obviously say that you don't have to go down the Apple route, because we know there is a premium on that as well. Android is a viable option. You might not have quite as smooth a ride when it comes to every app that you download being accessible. But, you know, when you've found the ones that are, and of course the OS itself is very accessible, so, you know, you can have equally as productive a time on that too.
Can I just pick you up on one thing you said there, Robin?
I knew he was going to do that.
Yeah, I think you were going to do the same, because I think Robin's had too much of the Christmas spirit. The iPhone was launched prior to 2010, 2007 to be precise.
Yeah, but
Robin Christofferson.
We're coming up to the 10th. Well, we had the 10th anniversary last year of Veo.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so you're right. I mean, Veo came around what, 2009.
Yeah.
And that would be midway point. So yeah, I suppose at the beginning of the decade. So okay, I'll maybe give you that. But the iPhone was definitely around. But the point is,
I was
right,
still using a Nokia until...
Well, yeah, but because that's right. Because as we actually, the three of us have said in previous shows, that when the iPhone came out with VoiceOver, nobody was sure what to do with it. And nobody was sure if they wanted anything to do with it. There was like a... It was almost like we were sending Christopher Columbus out, and we were deciding who Christopher Columbus was going to be to go and sort of discover this new land and, you know, decide if it was worth going to. And, you know, when we got the reports back, which were very mixed at the beginning, of course, because it was new. But you know, the first people who said, actually, do you know what? This is okay. This kind of works. It's got a bit of a way to go, but it's getting there. And that's where it began. So, you know, our discovery was in that early period, I guess, of 2010. I certainly didn't go near an iPhone until probably 2011 for that reason. And then it was at that point that we got into... And it's hard to believe, because when you talk about 2011, it feels like yesterday. But, you know, that was when I was first playing around with an iPhone for the first time. That just seems incredible. And like you say, David, how quick things have gone. And I think as well, you know, one of the other companies that really stood out for me this year, and obviously we're going to talk a bit more about Apple and Google as well and what they've done, but Amazon launched a device. And when I tell you the year, people will just be amazed, I think, because it was 2014 when we first saw the Amazon Echo. Just 6 years ago.
Love that device. And that
I can't imagine my life without that now. Actually, 6 years ago.
Yeah, and I mean, right, Siri.
I complained about the Amazon Echo still, but that's okay.
Yeah. I mean, they're not perfect. And we're going to look back. I mean, next week, we're going to look forward at the next decade. But, you know, in a few years' time, we're going to look back at virtual assistants of today and just be embarrassed about how basic and flawed they were. But.
Yeah. My God. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I use her every single day. There is still. I mean, well, I could do this with Siri, but actually, have you tried creating an appointment with Siri? She's not nearly as clever. And she just, she comes back with stupid things. So I use the A-Lady to create appointments, for example, all the time. That's just one example out of about 25 things that I regularly use her for. And it's super efficient. I have created an appointment with the title, the time, and all that sort of thing within 5 seconds. And whilst the other, you know, none of them are perfect by any means, the combination of machine learning, we obviously need to talk about AI more generally, and natural language processing has really helped us be more efficient and to lower the bar, lower the entry level to be able to use tech. There are so many people like my mum who use virtual assistants, whether it's the Echo or the in-your-pocket phone. And she's pathologically scared of technology in general, but you know those are accessible to her.
I actually, one thing that I've noticed is that my wife, who I mean, she works with technology, she's okay with it, blah blah blah. I mean, she's a scrapbooker and a Facebooker and everything else, so that's fine. But for quite a long time, she wouldn't use all the voice recognition stuff because it wasn't reliable. And I'm just in the last 2008 and 2019, you know, she wanders out of the bedroom in the morning and goes, you know, "Hey lady, turn on the lounge room light or the bathroom light, turn on the bathroom fan, turn off the boys' fans and all their lights in their bedroom, check door monitoring system, blah blah blah," all done via her voice. You know, change the air conditioner. And that to me really tells you when something's becoming like an everyday thing we don't even think about is when people who think, look, I've tried it once, I don't want to try it now because it doesn't work. Whereas now, because it works most of the time, they think it's a great thing and they just it's just part of their everyday life now.
Yeah, I could not agree more with that. My wife is exactly the same. My wife is quite techie. She's interested in tech, but I would say on a very surface level, in the sense of she's interested in it for what it can do for her. She's not interested in digging too much into it. And I think my mother, who you know is completely you know doesn't have a clue about technology, terrified to turn on the television because all these things keep appearing on the screen, these little boxes, and what do they all do? And she won't touch it, whereas she'll use the iPad and she'll use the Amazon Echo because she understands how it works and she knows that she can't really go too far wrong with it. And I think that's the point, that this technology has simplified so much, but it's also enabled so much. I mean, the idea of turning your central heating on and off with your voice is just brilliant. And I use that every single day. In fact, it's created that new problem where before, you know, it was the, you know, someone would turn the heating down, someone would turn it up, and you'd always be mucking around with the thermostat. Now it's, you know, you're quietly asking the A-lady, what's the temperature? And she's saying, what are you doing with that? Don't turn that down. And then she goes into the other room and tells her to, and, you know, I often think the lady is going to say, look, can you two work this out for yourselves? And then get back to me on it, because I don't know where I am here. But it's just, it is incredible how you can do that. You know, I recently got the Fire TV Cube, which I've got to say, I did a review on it and I wasn't overly keen on it as a device. I think it's possibly Amazon's most pointless product next to the clock. But in the sense that one thing it does do well is it allows you to control your television with your voice as well. So I could walk in and say, you know, turn on channel 506 on Sky and, you know, turn on the TV or whatever, and it just does it. And of course you can build in to routines and dig into all of that, and you could walk in and say I'm home, and then it just turns everything on and does what you want it to do. Smart switches, making sure things are turned off. Did I leave the iron on? Well, I can check now by voice, you know. I can say, did I leave the iron on? It says no, it switched off. Or, you know, turn off the iron, it's already off, or whatever. You know, it gives you those responses. So it's simple, but yet it's far more enabling. And I think about people who have got physical disabilities. You know, I know we're not looking ahead yet, but even in this even in the last decade, we've seen the rise of things like smart blinds. IKEA quietly launching smart blinds that will, you know, work with Lady A. Actually, a reasonably affordable price. I mean, it's an expensive blind; it's about 100 quid. But at the same time, you know, it's got smart capability in it. You go to a specialist provider for that, you'll pay a lot more. And, you know, IKEA can, of course, roll this out worldwide. And it just works really well. And the idea that your whole house can just come to life, and think about security. Think about if you're blind, being able to know if the lights are on or off. You can check these things. All of this tech has enabled so much.
And I think that touches kind of touches on this topic of the touch screen. And, you know, that's obviously come in with the iPhone. But everything has a touch screen these days. You know, you've got touch screen devices in kiosks, in McDonald's, in wherever, you know, where there used to be physical buttons potentially. So that was a challenge. And I remember taking a very long time to get used to the keyboard on the iPhone to be able to input text. And that's got better over the years. You know, if you were roaming your finger around in the early days, if you dwelled on one for a fraction of a second too long, then you'd get all these alternative characters popping up, and it was just a nightmare.
That's true, yeah.
Even today, I'm much happier to be able to dictate into a box, because that, for me anyway, that recognition quality is just so exceptionally good. And if in a long text there's just one word that's wrong, it's easy to go and, you know, it's quicker to go up and change that than having to type the whole thing in. And so touchscreens have been empowering, but they've also been really disconcerting. And when you're talking about connected home, everything you buy these days has got a touchscreen on it, which on one level is a nightmare for low or no vision people. But as you mentioned, you know, if you can connect it to something else, whether it's an app on your phone or your cylinder of choice, then you have access to that new smart goodness. that you otherwise would be locked out from. So that's definitely been a theme that has arisen in this last decade, the rise of the touchscreen.
Yeah, I mean, that's actually interesting when you talk about apps and controlling third-party devices, because, I mean, I've got an Ember temperature control mug.
That me too, thanks to you.
Thank you. Keeps my coffee nice and hot. And like stop that, Stephen.
I mean, I'll be honest, that's the one gadget I don't have. And
what?
I know I'm actually horrified I don't have one of these.
They're actually very good. When I look at my kitchen, I have got the Ember mugs on one side of the kitchen. My $3,500 coffee machine is on the other side, and that's got a touchscreen, so that's completely invisible.
I know it's $3,500. I mean, that's like £50, of course, and that's British money.
That's right. Well, I got a new kitchen put in three years ago, and it was the grand opening, so I had to buy something for the kitchen. So
of course, yeah, of course.
I hope even though the price is kind of double when they go to Australia, I hope your salaries are double what they are everywhere else as well.
Yeah.
No. My wife made the mistake of saying, you can have a coffee machine if you want to. And I went, can I have that one? She went, why? And I went, because it's app-driven. And she went, oh, right.
My wife is like that, and I just love her for that. She's just like, yeah, whatever. You know, it's your money. You can spend it.
It's only money.
Yeah.
But when you think about it, you can control devices from apps. I mean, I can control my air conditioner, my washing machine, the dryer. I don't know if it's actually app-controlled dishwasher now, but it's just amazing that when you think about things like Fitbits and other exercise things like wearables, because they're all app-driven to a smartphone and or as Robin put it, to your cylinder, then it becomes really accessible. So I think we really have reached a fairly good playing field. The only thing that I'm worried about, and we can talk about this in the next show, is the fact that these cylinders, or at least some of them that are not cylinders, they're more of a rectangle, are having screens coming back on them again. So you think, oh, God.
Well, I know that Stephen and I have slightly different views on...
diametrically opposed on this one, yes.
Right, yeah.
I don't like the... Oh, yeah, well, maybe save this one for the next show because, yeah, you're right.
That's right, yeah. I might have similar things to you, Stephen, so we'll just beat Robin over the head.
Absolutely.
So you mentioned about wearables there. Let's talk about wearables and health potentially, because this has been a massive thing in recent years. You know, you could point at a number of things over the last decade, obviously the rise of the smartphone, the rise of AI, but I would say that wearables is definitely up there if you had like a top five list. And obviously that's a mainstream thing, technology, everyone's kind of counting their steps, and these wearable devices like the Apple Watch, and I'm sure certain Fitbits and other ones as well, can measure your heart rate and I don't know if they do your ECG, whether you've got, you know, whether your heart is healthy, but certainly the latest gens of Apple Watch do. This is not an insignificant development, and there's a huge application or relevance to people with disabilities that we should talk about as well. As a blind person, I really value having key bits of information on my wrist that are always present as the complications, the little data points that are always included in the watch face. Because there's no getting away from the fact that, apart from using the A-Lady, of course, which does make it as quick as everybody else, when you've got a vision impairment, things can take longer to access, even if it's just like finding a button and double tapping instead of a single tapping on your phone, for example. But the one notable exception, of course, is driving a desktop computer, where if you use keystroke alternatives, you are infinitely more efficient than people. You know, you've done the keystroke for something before they've even half reached for the mouse. So, you know, apart with that exception, you know, anything that can make us more efficient is a brilliant thing. And it's such a small screen that they really have to think. You have to, you know, you can carefully select the few bits of information there and you can tap through for more information. So, yeah, tell me your thoughts about wearable devices.
Because what's interesting to me is the fact that when you think about it, there's only, as far as I know, there's only two talking wearable devices from the mainstream, and that's actually the Apple Watch and the Samsung Watch. So I've got a Galaxy Watch. But I don't think there's anything else that actually does that besides having to run it via an app on a smartphone, like all the lady, say, over the Fitbit. Because I've never had anybody talk about Android Wear and whether the the Android watches were any good to even look at. Because when I was investigating that type of stuff before I bought my Samsung Galaxy Watch, everybody said, oh, no, don't worry about that. It doesn't work very well at all. So when I was thinking about it, when you think about the Samsung Watch and the Apple Watch, they're really only two independent self-voicing, screaming to bass, large print, blah, 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 devices on the market, which is actually very interesting because the other thing that I want to talk about in the next show is, you know, while it's fantastic to have apps to drive machines, like exercise machines and that sort of stuff, wouldn't it be nice if your actual exercise thing, like your treadmill or your CrossFit machine or everything else, actually just talked in its own right? Because to me, why should you make, you know, adaptations or have to have a smartphone just to access a device because you just want to check how fast you're running?
I think that's a conversation for next week because I've got strong views on that.
Yeah, I'll say that I agree. My question is, though, about that, because I was looking at just before Christmas, I was looking at the Fossil smartwatch, which is... it has Google Wear OS built in. And I was wondering about this. Does that speak?
So my son, and sorry to butt in because I'm not going to answer the question that you've just posed because I don't know, but I think so because it Android, you know, Wear OS does have that capability as far as I'm aware, and David can tell us if that's true or not. Okay, good. But my son, who's fully sighted, got that exact watch and never wore it. And Wear OS, I think Android or certainly different press news articles recently have said that they're kind of taking their foot off the gas on that. They're not as excited about it as they were before. And, you know, there's not a lot of development or activity in the, you know, space of devices that implement it. And, you know, so from a purely mainstream point of view, there's something not appealing enough about Wear OS and what it gives you on a daily basis to make you want to wear it, I think.
Although what's weird, Robin, is that apparently you've got to be careful because some of the actual Android Wear-based watches don't have speakers.
Right.
So while Android
Wear, interesting,
it actually won't work because there's no speaker. So that was the issue that I always had. I think, oh, you know, I think the LG one or one of them had a speaker. But, you know, when you pick, and I think the same applies to, I don't know, actually, no, all the Samsung watches have speakers in them, so they're fine. But that was always the issue with the Android Wear, that you could have some watches that had speakers and some that didn't. So you always had to be careful. Because I never understood why Fitbit, for example, and I know it's a different operating system inside it, but I never understood why they couldn't do some sort of speaker type thing actually in the Fitbit itself.
I mean, they do haptics, which, you know, at least you can get a buzz on your wrist to tell you that a message has come in, even though you can't read it. And then you can look at it on your phone, which is a limited use. But it's a shame because you'd think that having your watch, your smartwatch, be able to do chimes and do a little ting when you get a message would be table stakes, you know, would be an entry level requirement. And that would require a speaker. But maybe it's about affordability, although the Fossil one isn't cheap.
You see, there's a strange consistency throughout 2010 to 2020, and that is inconsistency, oddly enough. The one consistent thing is that we've had all this inconsistency with accessibility. So on one hand, you get your Apple phones and your Apple smartwatches and Android phones, Microsoft computers, all of that has got wonderful accessibility in there. But then there are these weird things that come along. I mean, you could even say that about Microsoft products, actually. You know, Office Suite, fairly accessible. Skype, terrible, which is just kind of weird. And then you've got Google Wear OS, which does not seem to have been developed very well at all. And it's, you know, and this goes to a whole wide range of different things. I mean, we can talk about audio description as well, which I know we're going to talk about later, and its rise in 2010 to 2020. But I think it's that kind of inconsistency that creates problems for us, because, you know, and that's why I think a lot of blind people just have not put money into these devices. I've heard very few people. In fact, David, I think it's only you I've really heard talk about the Samsung Watch.
Yeah, no, it has been long. Because every time I mention it, it's like, oh, David's just popping over to the dark side because he feels guilty that he always talks about Apple.
But we wouldn't know how good or otherwise how viable these products are if we hadn't listened to your reviews. So you're taking the hit for us. You know,
and somebody's got to do it. You know, it's Christopher Columbus again. Somebody's got to go and find that new land and decide if it's any good or not. And you've ended up in a place where you've thought, you've ended up in Android land, and you thought, it's terrible.
We should say for the listeners that you don't live in Android land, though, on a daily basis. you are definitely iOS, really, for your daily driver, aren't you?
I am. I mean, I do have a Samsung, phone and tablet and Galaxy.
As does somebody else.
Isn't this problem, right? Because obviously our job, right, all of us, our job here is to be as objective as possible on all of the various channels that we're on. And the problem is that sometimes it's just quite hard not to say, look, guys, if you're blind, buy an iPhone and get over it.
That's right.
I know certain people that would obviously want to put the other side of the... Yeah, it depends on what you want to do. But I would say, and this goes back to...
Well, cost is a big factor in it. Cost is a massive factor in it.
Not as much these days, if you want to just get an old second-hand iPhone 8 or something, you know.
I think in the old days, I used to get a lot of pushback. Well, not old days. And on the show, here on Tech Talk, I got a lot of pushback. And it generally is around cost. We had a comment from one of our listeners, Jules Allam, just a few weeks before Christmas, saying exactly that, which was, you can get cheaper Android phones that are very good in terms of accessibility.
Absolutely.
But it's how you define good, I think, is the key.
Well, good enough, and it's, I think. And you can certainly point at
the... It's the in-the-moment thing. The thing for me is it's always in the moment. When I need to access something quickly, I'll turn to iPhone. If I need to do something quickly, like send an email on a computer, I'll turn to the Windows PC, because I know those will give me those instant, quick, get the job done approaches. Whereas Android, it's a nice phone to play around with, and it does do the job. And if it's a Sunday afternoon and you're just scrolling through Amazon or you're checking out, eBay, or you're, looking for a new book to listen to, then that might be fine. But I think it's the getting stuff done thing. Again, it goes back to employment to some degree. If you're in employment, you need the tools to get the job done because you can't really afford to muck around.
I mean, you can look at one example on Android, which is that the TalkBack screen reader doesn't support multi-touch. If you're an iOS user, think how many gestures you do that employ more than one finger. So that's, I think, a good example of where it's not, there's a definite gap there. But I think that Apple is worthy of our trust. We know that every device that comes out, we're, unless it's kind of inherently like Apple Arcade, for example, I don't think we'll ever be able to be played by someone who's...
You've got to be realistic.
Yeah, exactly. But, going back to the wearables, it's, even though Apple has really pushed the envelope and, people want, all organizations really want to be as successful as Apple and have as strong a brand. So they've all really started to prioritize accessibility over recent years. And we've seen it with the built-in offerings, particularly in Windows. But Microsoft, they brought out the Microsoft Band, which is their answer to the Apple Watch, etc. It was completely inaccessible.
Garbage.
Totally inaccessible. So, and that wasn't a million years ago. And it was at the time when, it was well established that Apple were the new setting the bar when it comes to inclusive design. So, yeah, I think that that's, and I'm sure next week we're going to talk about what might be coming up in the future. And I'm excited that we're not going to be left behind in all new hotness.
Exactly. What's quite interesting too is that I really do agree with the premise about Apple is that they don't necessarily bring something new to the market, but they improve upon what's actually in the market. And my big example of that is the recent one in 2019, which I absolutely love, is the AirPods Pro and what they've done with the noise cancellation transparency mode. And when you're using with the live listen with noise cancellation, when you're in a noisy restaurant, that is absolutely brilliant. So, you know, we can talk about the AirPods and there's other things on the market, but what Apple's done with the noise cancellation, transparency mode and the other stuff to do with the AirPods Pro is absolutely amazing. Even with as far as the getting on and off the ear tips. I mean, I know of my other earbuds that I've got, I have to yank the ear tips off and shove them back on again, whereas the AirPods Pro, you just push them on, pull them off, and off you go again.
I think, though, it's that, you know, but it's also the ability that they have to connect with your devices and how they work with your devices as well. I think that's the key, that because, it just sounds like we're massive fanboys, and I suppose we are, but you buy these products, you know they're all going to interlink with each other. I love the fact that when I'm sitting on my Mac, and I've got a Windows PC at work, and we're supposed to use that all the time at work because that's what we have. But I end up bringing in my Mac and I do all my work on there because truthfully, I can bounce between my messages, I can make calls, I can have one pair of earphones in or my AirPods and do all of the tasks on one device. Someone sends me a text, I can answer it. Someone sends me an email, I can answer it. I can answer a call. I can do all of this on one device, and I can stand up, leave the room, take my phone with me, and then continue to do all of that on the iPhone. And it's that togetherness that I don't think any other ecosystem has worked out. Microsoft haven't got that yet. I mean, they've tried it, and there are examples of it between Android and Microsoft. They're trying to work more closely together. And, of course, since the death of the Microsoft phone, which was just never really going to make it, it seemed. And also the death of the Amazon Fire phone as well, if we'd remember that, which I still think was a bit of a shame, because I think if the Amazon Fire phone had come around with Lady A, that would have been a very different proposition today. That might have had more of a chance. And again, Apple would have brought it out at a lower cost as well. But look, we could talk about this. We could be back and forth on this all day. I wanted to shift on to some other topics. An audio description is one that's very passionate to me. I've talked about it a lot on the show, and I've seen a massive movement towards not just more AD, not just more audio description, but better audio description in the last decade. And I have to say, I put that firmly at the feet of Netflix, who have done an incredible job in making and just deciding that all of their original content will be audio described. When I hear of a new show coming up and I get my email, as I get now every couple of days, an email saying, "We've got a new show for you, Stephen, you'll like this," I know that it's going to be audio described. So I know I can enjoy it. When Amazon Prime send me, "Oh, here's a new show," I'm thinking, maybe, will it? Episode 2 not have it? You know, who knows? Whereas I know Netflix has it, and I know that it will be good audio description. I actually now very rarely watch TV. I tend to listen to it. I'll maybe bounce the audio to my HomePods, or if I'm in bed, I'll just connect my phone to my Echo device, and I will just listen to the show there. And the audio description is that good. It's well balanced in the audio. You know, it's done with thought, and that's why I think is different. What are your thoughts?
I mean, I'm famously not into television. I have been listening to some of the TV Plus, Apple TV Plus shows. Yep. For All Mankind is really good for anyone that has access to TV Plus. The AD is really good, and a lot of people have been talking about how good it is. So because I watch or listen to so little TV, then I haven't got anything to compare it to, really. But at the same time, and this is probably me, I still struggle to follow the action. And for example, how many characters in that show? Probably 30. And they never, after the first time, they never introduce the person's name again. So scene after scene includes different people, and they don't tell you who it is. And I'm thinking, I'm having to work really hard here, or I'm halfway through the scene when it suddenly twigs because of something they've said, who the character is. So I still find it really hard work. And others may hate this because they're much more adept at following the audio description. But, you know, I'd still like them to be more rather than less. More is more rather than less is more when it comes to AD, as far as I'm concerned. So there are long stretches where there's just, you know, a bit of dialogue to and fro with lots of gaps in between. It would be nice if they threw in a she raised her eyebrow or Helen smiled or something, just to kind of give you that extra bit of information. So you're not, for me personally, find myself in the dark sometimes. And because I often, if I do watch TV, have got a pair of eyes next to me, I'll ask Judith, you know, oh, who's that? And she'll tell me. So it's almost like AI needs to step in and you should be able to query the device that you're listening to. Who's talking at the moment? A bit like Shazam it, you know.
Yeah, or, you know, what song am I listening to? Or, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, it's interesting because, I mean, here in Australia, we've been struggling with audio description for a long time. So it was great that Netflix has it. It's fantastic that iTunes has it with their movies. But they did a pilot a couple of years ago on the ABC and only on the iView app, which is on the iPad, not on the free-to-air transmission. And did it for 18 months and then they just stopped because they said, oh, well, we've done the trial and that was the end of it. So it's only at the end of 2019 that the federal government here in Australia has committed, I think it's $2 million, to both the ABC and SBS in here in Australia to do audio description. So I think that's going to be a huge thing because what sort of irritates me about the stuff at the moment is, you know, I want to watch stuff on, you know, standard free-to-air. I don't want to have to use my app on my smart device or only use whatever else I might need to use to listen to audio description. So I think it's great that, you know, I can basically bring up a TV show and view it. The only thing that irritates me about audio description is I just wish there was a way that you could actually do it without having to actually irritate the rest of your family. Because my boys go, Dad, I understand you need AD, but really, you know, I'm watching a, you know, whatever movie here and I don't need the audio description. So I just wish there was some sort of other channel that you could, I don't know, plug a pair of headphones into and just have it going in your own headphones rather than exposing everybody else to the audio description.
So we need to plant a flag to remember for next week to talk about next generation audio.
Yeah, because we may have the answer to that one for you, David. Mm-hmm. I think it's coming soon. But, you know, it's interesting you say that because, of course, there are so many ways to enjoy television now. And it's interesting with streaming and free to air and all of that. You know, you're right. You want to be able to enjoy it on where you want to watch it. So if it's free to air in your case, we have the opposite problem in the UK where we've got lots of audio description available on TV. So we've got various providers here. You've got Freeview, which is the free-to-air platform, Sky, which is the paid-for, and cable is Virgin. And all of these channels and everything else, they do have lots of AD content. The problem is a major player like Sky, for example, doesn't have any of its content available on demand with audio description. Lots of movies to watch, none of them have AD. And only in the last year did they bring out subtitles on it, which seems completely insane that even that wasn't available. But, you know, we're moving hopefully to a place where that changes. But, you know, what I've seen in the UK is a massive change because of legislation. When legislation was brought in to, you know, essentially demand that audio description be available on, I think it was only 10% of programmes. Channels like, well, networks like the BBC really exceeded expectations on that. They're now up to something like 30%. It's 20% on commercial channels. And the reason for that is, and it's actually rising by the year, and the reason for that is because as they make shows with audio description and there are so many shows being repeated, they can actually claim a higher number of programmes already described, because in theory that's true, because more of the schedule is audio described, but actually that's because you're playing so many repeats. But, you know, aside that, the point is that the shows are being described. And we're really getting to a point where, and I hope we see much, much better improvement in this in the next decade, because frankly, the availability on demand has been ridiculous. On free-to-air, good. I still have issues around the quality of audio description in the UK. Big show here is Coronation Street, of course, David. You've probably heard of it. It's a big soap opera that's been here for, you know, since the dawn of time. I think the dinosaurs used to watch it. And it's a great show, but audio description is really, really bad at times. They keep getting their own characters. There was one scene I remember where they referred to a girl's name in the show. The girl in question, the name of the person who apparently had just walked in to the restaurant and said hello to someone else, was actually the name of a small child who was only like 6 months old. And I thought, I don't know how that's even possible, that this six-month-old child could walk in and hold this conversation with this adult. Exactly. It's impressive. So things like that are lacking. And it's two things. It's availability, but it's also quality.
Actually, it's interesting because there's a bit of a dichotomy going on too here in Australia, at least, because now we've had the rise, particularly in the last maybe I'd say about 3 or 4 years, of talking accessible televisions, which is absolutely brilliant. The problem is our major cable provider in Australia, Foxtel, is still not accessible. So I can access free-to-air on my digital television. But if I want to watch anything on Foxtel, I still can't use the box independently. So is your cable provider in the UK accessible, the actual box?
No.
Oh.
But
right.
You can get Freeview boxes that are, which is a different...
Right.
It's one of the...
Well, no. There's nothing that speaks. You cannot... Okay, let me clarify this. On certain televisions, for example, Samsung, I think LG, Panasonic, yep, Sony... Those have built-in electronic program guides and the access Freeview, and you can actually turn on a screen reader of sorts to read them. And Samsung, I would say, is actually leading the path on that one. Beyond that, I mean, Samsung go a little bit further. You can access the on-demand content with the screen reader. For example, mainly Netflix and Amazon, but beyond that, not much, because the third-party apps that you download from the Samsung store onto the TV aren't accessible. You get WebView, a bit like anyone who's tried to use a Fire TV stick with VoiceView. You get that kind of thing. You know, the inbuilt content is fine, but it's the third-party content. So you've got that issue. On actual Freeview boxes, I don't think there's any of those that are accessible. There used to be years ago, but not anymore.
Just from high contrast and colour choice.
Yeah, exactly, maybe visually, but yeah, necessarily not audibly. And Sky and Virgin boxes have no accessibility other than the ability to change contrast.
Right. That's a pity, isn't it?
And coming soon will be to all Freeview TVs, they don't have to be super smart, is... a talking EPG via channel 555, which
just announced, yeah,
a couple of weeks ago. Okay. So, that will be exciting too.
Look, we've not got a lot of time left. I want to just bring up one other subject, because I mean, we could do 10 hours just on this on the decade, because there is so much. But I think we've balanced this pretty well. And the one thing I want to finish on is Braille, because the last decade, and especially in the last few years of the decade, has brought about something which I don't think we ever thought we'd see, and that was affordable Braille displays. And thanks to a conglomerate of charities, including the RNIB, we saw the rise of the Orbit Reader 20 Braille device, which is on sale here for about £450-£500, dependent on whether you're a member of RNIB or not. There are special grants as well for certain people under the age of 28 available from RNIB. There are other grant options available. You can get it for next to nothing, or it can be paid for, which is amazing, dependent on your personal circumstances. And do check out the RNIB website for more on that, because it's well worth looking into these things. But, you know, the fact is that they have developed this wonderful piece of technology that essentially, I think, has given Braille a chance going into the new decade. I think had it not happened, and the cost of Braille devices being still way over the £1,000 mark, £2,000 mark, I think Braille would be seriously in doubt in the future, considering the rise in the amount of audio platforms we can use. Would Braille die potentially as a result of that? I think it might have done. I think this gives it a chance, and I want to get your thoughts on that, David.
Yeah, look, I mean, I overall agree. I mean, the Orbit was a good, it is actually a good Braille display. I mean, it's a little bit noisy for my taste, but, you know, as a basic Braille display, it works beautifully well. And we've also got the other, you know, 14-cell Braille displays around, which I don't know why you want to bother on, at least on, I mean, they're okay for a mobile device like the Focus 14, the Brilliant 14, those sort of ones. But what's interesting to me also too with these Braille displays, I think Braille displays have really become useful, and or people seem to be buying them, at least that I know about, is when they're using their, did I say iPhone again, with Braille, because they want the best of both worlds, having speech output and Braille input. I know when I'm doing my radio shows here at Vision Australia for Talking Tech, I will often monitor what I'm doing on my show notes and the time, frequency and everything else on my Braille app because nobody else can hear my thing, you know, talking to them and so on. But the other thing is Brailing on a glass screen. I mean, who would have imagined that we could actually Braille on a touch screen to into a phone? I mean, that's absolutely brilliant. So when I'm typing most of the time, I'm using the BSI, the Braille screen input mode. I'm not using, you know, the new swipe to type in iOS 13 or anything else. I'm actually using Braille screen input. So I'm inputting in Braille on the glass screen of my iPhone or my iPad, but I'm actually reading it in Braille on my Braille display. It's absolutely brilliant.
That's a really good point. Braille skills are still very valuable. I mean, we're still at, I think it's 4% of registered blind people who are, you know, have Braille as a skill. I probably wouldn't include myself in that 4% because mine is so rusty, but I certainly am much more familiar and comfortable with input than with reading. And I haven't got a Braille display because of the, you know, it's a catch 22 really, and I should probably take the fingerprint course like Stephen did over this last year and probably ongoing. But Braille input would get around that problem of typing on that challenging keyboard, and sometimes dictation isn't an option if you're in a really noisy environment or you want to be private. So yeah, please don't forget Braille input. It could be the first thing you learn, because learning the characters and how you input them, I would argue, is a lot easier than learning to read.
That's really funny, Robin, because I actually went out from the National Disability Insurance Scheme here in Australia. I actually went out and purposely bought myself a Perkins Brailler again, because I've actually missed typing Braille. Like, to me, a Perkins Brailler is your old pen and paper. Mm-hmm. You want to jot down a note, you've always got your Brailler with you. So, and like, and I learned Braille when I was eight. So that's like, you know, 40 years ago or something. So, and I still always use Braille every single day of my working day. And I've got a dot watch, which is a smart watch with a 4-cell Braille display. I've got 3 Braille don't takers sitting in front of me. I've got 2 Braille displays, my Perkins Brailler, blah, blah, blah. So I'm always using, and I always get really excited when somebody gives me a Braille document. It's like, oh my God, I can read in my own format. This is absolutely brilliant. So,
and in silence as well, which is a lovely thing. We are out of time for this hour. I could go on and on. I'm really enjoying this conversation. But let's continue next week when we get into the future. What will the next decade bring? What will we be talking about, mourning about in 2030? These wearable devices are shockingly accessible. I'm intrigued to know what we think of the future of technology in the next episode. So do stick around for that. Do check out our podcast and keep up to date. And also, don't forget to email techtalk@rnib.org.uk. David Woodbridge and Robin Christopherson back with us next week, same time.
Thanks.
Thank you.